Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 22nd, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody, and happy National Tooth Fairy Day.
Okay.
Just because it's the Tooth Fairy. Come on.
Okay.
More importantly, though, it's National Surgical Oncologist Day. I've known three people, one of them my sister-in-law, another my best friend, whose lives have literally been saved by a surgical oncologist over the years. Yeah. And the third survivor was the then 16-year-old daughter of my boss at the time, was diagnosed with a rare form of soft tissue cancer.
Wow.
That our oncologist told her parents she had a 15% chance of making it to her high school graduation.
Oh, wow.
Well, now 30 years later, Susan is the healthy, thriving, happy-go-lucky mother of two high schoolers of her own.
Of her own. Oh, how nice.
Living the ultimate beach life with her husband, Nate. So thank you, surgical oncologists, who most of the time get it all right.
All right. Well, yeah, I have a question for you since we talk a lot about inflation.
Yeah.
And you've got two little grandchildren. What do you propose to leave under their pillows when they begin losing their teeth?
Well,
it used to be we used to get a dime or a quarter.
I was the same. We're the same generation. I was happy to get a quarter. The only exception was one time when it must have been one of the later adult tooths to come in. My grandparents were visiting us from D.C. And the next day I had a dollar under my pillow. And it was like, I'm feeling pretty doggone lucky that I've got a tooth fairy who cares about me. We haven't talked about it. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think hopefully maybe we'll just write them a small check and deposit it into the savings account.
For college.
There you go. It's the Tooth Fairy 529.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you. It's funny. Not too early to think about it.
Yeah. But I know I've heard stories $20 is almost pretty common now, I would think.
Her tooth.
For a tooth.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've I mean, and the point is the dollar doesn't buy anything anymore. I mean, what can these kids buy? I mean, you know, I mean, think of how many penny pieces of penny candy you could buy for 25 cents.
Yeah.
A lot. And if you could get two for a penny, that's a lot of pieces of candy.
Oh,
now you get, what, two candy bars for 20 bucks?
Silver dollar.
Yeah.
Those red silver dollars, you get two for a penny back then.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, 20 bucks. I guess my wife and I better start saving.
You better start saving.
Thanks for the heads up.
Oh, you're quite welcome. But all you have to do is buy some gold, and it'll help you with those inflation numbers.
There you go. You know, I missed the cue once again.
You did?
Well.
Let's go ahead and see what gold did today. It was up a little bit today. It did peep over 1900, but we're up 280 at 1892. Silver was up 9 cents at 2349. Platinum was higher by $11,932, and palladium was up 11, 1286. The USDX today was stronger by 0.28 at 103.61. Crude oil was down 47 cents at 80.25. Paper markets, I don't think they really did all that much today. You had, the Dow was down 170 points, S&P down 12, and the NASDAQ was up 8. But the S&P did close lower. It was weighted by the declines in bank and some retail shares. So I really didn't have a...
No, I'm just looking at those treasury yields.
Yes, I know.
Oof,
let me get there. 10-year yield, 4.33. And that was down today. Natural gas was down it was down a little, like 2.75%, 2.56. But the Asian markets, they were positive. Your markets were all positive. So we had a little bit of a different day today. So, you know, what's interesting, and this is part of I think tomorrow will be more of an interesting day. You had there's another rating agency, Dave, that is S&P Global has cut the credit ratings and revised its outlook for some U.S. banks. And it's following a similar move by Moody's, warning that funding risks and weaker profitability will likely test the sector's credit strength. The S&P downgraded the ratings of Associated Bank Corp and Valley National Bank Corp on funding risks and a higher reliance on brokered deposits. But it also downgraded UMB Financial Corp, Commercia Bank Key Corp, citing large deposit outflows. And, of course, these are higher interest rates. And, you know, you see these rate rise in interest rates. And we talk about the impact that it has on various industries, how it's weighing on many banks' funding and liquidity. This was said by the S&P. And they said, adding that deposits held by the FDIC-insured banks will continue to decline as long as the Fed is quantitatively tightening. Dave.
Yeah, the rating agency also downgraded the outlook of S&T Bank and River City to negative from stable on high commercial real estate exposure, among other factors. Earlier this month, as Melody alluded, Moody's cut the ratings of banks by one notch, 10 banks, that is, and placed six others, too big to fails. The banking giants, including Bank of New York Mellon, U.S. Bank Corp, State Street, and Truist, on review for potential downgrades. Of course, the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature in March sparked a crisis of confidence in the banking sector here, which led to a run on deposits at a bunch of regional banks, despite authorities like the FDIC launching emergency measures to try to shore up confidence.
You know, we've seen home sales dropping again. Sales of previously owned homes dropped 2.2% in July from June to a seasonally adjusted annualized rate of 4 million units, according to the National Association of Realtors. Sales were 17% lower.
Wow.
Compared with a year ago. And we're at the slowest July pace since 2010.
Should be a good month for sales, I guess.
Wow.
Wow.
But you know what? Where's the reaction to any of this? Where is there some sort of, oh, gee, wow. They just don't talk about it. They just don't bring you the news. And they make everything a non-event.
Anything to save the nation from a hard landing.
There you go. So the 17% lower compared with a year ago accounts for closing. So contracts were likely signed in May and June when mortgage rates went from around 6.5% to well over 7%. Sales fell month to month in all regions except the West, where they rose about 3%. Sales dropped the most in the Northeast, and that was down 6%. So everyone is blaming the higher mortgage rates, a tight supply for the decrease. There were 1.1 million homes for sale at the end of July, and that was 15% fewer than a year ago in July. So I don't know. The short supply continues to push both competition and prices higher. The median price of a home sold in July was $406,000. And that's an increase of 2% from July last year. But you know what? Something's going to break. I mean, when you have a 17% drop compared to a year ago, you're going to start seeing housing prices begin to drop significantly.
You'd think.
Yeah, it will.
You really would think. I mean, they're talking about prices having risen in all regions, except in the West, where they were flat. About three quarters of the homes sold were on the market for less than a month. That's still indicating strong demand. 30% of them sold for above their list price. Chief economist at Realtor.com, Daniel Hale, says home shoppers have seen the number of options dwindle as homeowners are largely content to stay put and enjoy their current home, especially those with a low mortgage rate. Buyers continue to use cash to gain a competitive advantage over other bidders. All cash sales made up 26% of sales. Up a little bit. Well, it looks like two percentage points. That's what, roughly 10%. From a year earlier. Interesting market here. It's the Achilles heel of the economy, the mainstreamers are saying. Take your choice. People are hopping in that rental market. That's hotter than can be. What was that, up 7.7%? Last CPI reading. It's going to keep inflation stubbornly high for the coming months. See what happens.
Well, I think these higher interest rates have definitely taken off the higher dollar homes, and maybe that's why the median house is rising, because people are buying, instead of buying a higher valued home, they're moving into that lower end, pushing those prices up. I wonder if the increase actually goes across the board. I wouldn't think so. I bet those lower value. When I was 20 years old, did I ever imagine that the median home would be a $500,000? Are you kidding me?
Oh. Yep. Crazy.
The value crazy. Of our dollar. Thank you very much.
We've seen the competitiveness right in our own neighborhood. There's a smaller, older home built in the 60s, I think. 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths. Just went on the market, I think, 245.
Wow.
It was listed on a Friday. By Sunday, they had 15 different potential customers through it, and by Wednesday, they had a bidding war, according to the owners, the sellers, who we know quite well. In any event, it ended up selling for over 25,000 above. So what, 270,000 above its.
Wow.
Good 10% over its listing price. So
yeah,
just a local example in middle America here in southeastern PA.
Yeah, and those are the homes that are selling, because bigger homes just aren't. I mean, with the 7% rate,
yeah,
plus,
yeah,
it's a lot of bucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, with all these interest rate increases by the Fed, supposedly it's supposed to put a damper on the economy. And now they really don't know what outcome is going to happen. They can talk all they want. And you're going to have one say one thing and somebody else say the other. And, because nobody, they're just balancing the act here, But there was a speech given this morning by Richmond Fed President Tom Barkin, and he said retail sales were stronger than expected in July and that the consumer confidence is rising. Really? The reacceleration scenario has come in onto the table in a way that it really wasn't 3 or 4 months ago. So he's talking about that inflation stays high and the economy strengthens, which means more rates. That means higher mortgage rates, too. He also added that if he got convinced that inflation was remaining high and demand was giving no signal that inflation was going to come down, that would make the case for further tightening of monetary policy through higher rates. That's what I just said. Retail sales rose 0.7% in July, far more than expected, and the economy grew at a 2.4% annualized rate in the second quarter. And 2.4 annualized rate in the second quarter, that really isn't a gung-ho number, but it's not negative territory, so I guess that's a positive, Dave.
Yeah. Barkin said the possibility of a strengthening economy means a broader playing field of possibilities beyond the Fed's recent discussions of whether the economy might slide into a recession or achieve the so-called soft landing. I'm not sure what other possibilities there are. I mean, I guess, we've talked about the rich session, the rolling recessions, where some sectors are in it, others may fall into it, but, a broader recession may not occur as traditionally defined. But who knows? I mean, Barkin said he wouldn't prejudge what the Fed should do at its next meeting at the end of September, when it's widely expected to leave its benchmark interest rate unchanged in the current 5.25 to 5.5 range. In fact, I think I looked earlier, 85% of Fed fund futures traders see them keeping it the same. The other 15% sees another 25 basis point increase. I think September is a pause month. But again, we have more data to come in the next 4 weeks. Now, Barkin, I think, notably said there's nothing in the recent market movements that caused him to think financial conditions were tightening too quickly or in ways that were concerning. Specifically, he said, it doesn't strike me that having a 10-year rate over 4% is somehow wildly inappropriate, given the Fed's current policy. So that's telling, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, if they're going to continue strengthening, this is going to change the opinion of a lot of these economists who think they see a soft landing coming. And so you have a lot of these, Wall Streeters that are backing off, a harder landing at about 69% of economists surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics say they see a soft landing on the horizon. Well, they're going to change it again, and I think the more economists that say there's a soft landing means just the opposite.
Mm.
That's what I believe.
Mm.
So, because they really don't have much to back it up. They're basing a soft landing on the rate increases stopping and actually going down, I believe. But anyway, I hear the music, so we'll have to finish this up when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver Trading. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. You'll find the radio programs. You'll find Dave's articles. You'll find
Doug Nolan,
Wendy Wilson. And you'll see some of our most commonly traded coins, but you do have to call us for a price. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And I think that was pretty much it, you know, on that soft landing, hard landing. So I'm a middle landing, but anyway. I don't understand this, sorry, because I've been reading things where the U.S. steel is really not heating up, that it's just going the opposite way. But maybe it had to do with last week, the U.S. steel rejected a $7.25 billion cash and stock takeover offer from competitor Cleveland-Cliffs, a producer that, like U.S. steel, has been around for more than 100 years. U.S. steel instead kicked off a review of strategic alternatives and maybe some sort of a formal auction process, saying it had received other multiples unsolicited proposals. Kind of like the housing market, but but you have S-Mark, a privately held company involved in the steel, oil, and gas industry, said it Two made an offer, $7.8 billion, all cash. How do you have $7.8 billion all cash? I don't know. Anyway, and S-Mark is a non-union shop. So there's lots of bids out there going on there. And even under its contract, the U.S. Steel, the United Steelworkers Union, has a right to bid for the company. So interesting, Dave.
Yeah, that's significant. I mean, the USW says it will not endorse anyone other than Cliffs for such a transaction. That union represents 11,000 U.S. steelworkers around the country. Now, the contract doesn't obligate U.S. Steel to take the union's offer, but there's a question over whether the steelworkers can veto other potential buyers, which is particularly interesting. The union argues it has a de facto veto, but it's a claim U.S. Steel disputes. The issue is one that's likely heading to arbitration and even perhaps play out in the courts. In the meantime, it means that the union has the potential to really gum up U.S. Steel's deal-making mojo. That's an interesting concept. This West Virginia University College of Law professor Ann LaFaso talks about real strong contractual rights that could translate to the union taking legal action seeking to temporarily block any deal they don't approve of. She said this too: U.S. Steel gave up their right to unilaterally close the deal without talking to the union. Now they have to talk to the union and deal with the delay. And that, she added, is going to cost real money. Mm. So, interesting.
Well, I guess it would be, you know, because you're going to, the U.S. Steel gets bought out, you're going to have how many of those workers unemployed as they merge, I would think. Companies always lay off after they buy out other big companies. So,
yeah.
whereas you had two, now you have one.
Yeah, it's...
Because China does all that stuff.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I mean, yes. This ain't your grandfather's steel company. I mean, we both grew up in the same town where many fathers of our own families and friends worked at one of three local steel mills, Bethlehem Steel and Lebanon Steel Foundry. And I forget the other one. But anyway.
Yep. So speaking of job losses, you have Charles Schwab. They're planning to lower its headcount, joining a list of Wall Street firms taking a similar path. They didn't disclose the number of employees that they were going to lay off. And we're just going to tell you we're doing. We're not going to tell you. Several companies across corporate America, including Wall Street banks, have trimmed workforces this year, trying to rein in costs with this high inflation, these rising interest rates. And of course, you know, everybody's in debt. They have to borrow. So naturally, you have higher borrowing costs with the rates. Schwab has to turn to supplementary funding sources to counter the uncertain economic environment. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, Schwab had to turn to supplementary funding sources.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of shape are they in?
Well, not as good a shape as they told the stockholders, the owners of TD Ameritrade a couple
really?
Years ago when they were approved to buy.
Yeah.
That should be raising a couple of eyebrows. I lost my train of thought. I had another thought I wanted to offer. Sorry about that.
No worries.
It looks like they're going to consolidate their real estate footprint as well. $500 million of incremental annual savings, it says, by downsizing corporate offices and these layoffs. Second half of this year, they expect. I'll say they're looking to raise up to $2.5 billion through a new debt offering. I'll be talking in more detail about the debt storm that's a-coming in today's third segment. When Schwab acquired TD Ameritrade, by the way, a few years back, it created a company said to be worth $6 trillion in client access assets across 28 million client accounts. Now, that's big.
Yes, but I go back to the question. I mean, that's huge. And they're laying off, they're downsizing their real estate. I mean, how bad are, how, I mean, if I was their client, if I was their client, I'd be moving. I don't know where I'd go, but I'd be going someplace else. I mean, that's certainly, but is it too big to fail?
Oh, I would, Schwab? Oh, absolutely.
Famous last words until they get bailed out.
Yeah.
You know, government will bail them out, just like they did the other insurance company back in 2008. What was the name of that company?
AIG.
AIG, yeah. So we did talk about this yesterday, about the $80,000. That's what workers want. So, we'll just kind of move on to that. And, you know, we do talk a lot about the longer-term yields. And probably the most important economic development in recent weeks is a surge in these longer-term interest rates. And, you know, that's going to, or it could portend a new environment where more expensive borrowing costs are, you know, folks, they're here to stay. Financial markets increasingly are priced for a world where there will be no return to the cheap money that we've had for so many years, decades. The yield in the 10-year treasuries was 4.35 this morning, highest in 16 years. And the rate was a full percentage point lower in early April, 3.29. You have other longer-term market rates have seen similar dramatic rises, most notably home mortgages. We're talking about, you know, almost 7.5% on Friday. No, and it's a two-decade high. What people don't, I don't understand why people wouldn't think it's going to create a new wave of pain in the housing market that we've been talking about. And it's most notably, the recent surge is particularly notable because it's during a time when the economic data has been mostly as expected. And federal officials have been quieter than usual. And they have, Dave.
Well, some are saying that suggests it's all being driven by a shift in investors' long-term sentiment rather than the latest headlines. That would be an unusual shift, I think. But I guess, you know, unless you're a precious metal investor, just about all of us, particularly physical owners of gold and silver, are in it for the long run because we're in it to win it. Even precious metal investors in either stocks or ETFs, paper traders. And that's why there's a little bit more volatility in the precious metal market, in the gold and silver in particular, than there used to be, because there's so much more day-to-day profit taking on the ups and downs of gold, silver prices. But the bottom line is that you're a long-term investor, so you're going to stick with it. Not so much with paper market investors. In particular, investors seem to be adjusting the possibility of the long-term neutral interest rate. That's the rate the Fed hovers around in the coming years, is reverting to its pre-Great Recession norm. And that would make sense if the recent investment boom continues. Plus, budget deficits remain high, which they will. Inflation pressures prove persistent, yes. And productivity growth accelerates in the way that many artificial intelligence specialists expect. Well, that remains to be seen. There may also be technical factors at work. For example, the Bank of Japan is backing away from its policies to suppress their bond yields. So Japanese investors may be inclined to reallocate their investments away from U.S. treasuries and for their own domestic debt. China's economic distress and political tension with the U.S. may lead it back to back away from Treasury bond purchases even more than it has. And on the supply side, the Treasury Department's been expanding its bond auctions to fund the government's deficit more often and more dollars. Analysts at Evercore ISI say it's clear that the move in yields represent a serious tightening of financial conditions. Do you feel the squeeze?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I mean, yeah, I mean, they got to roll over all this debt at these higher rates. And I mean, the question is, how high can the rates go until it has that impact that we're expecting? And that we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we did see every time the 10-year went over 4, that you did see the dollar drop and you did see stock market decline. But it hasn't declined as much this time. So it's so now they're getting used to it again. And it's amazing how people get used to something, how they absorb just like the way we absorb inflation, you know. Yeah. We got used to eggs being so expensive, and we have to have them, so we buy them.
We're complacent. Could it be that we just don't pay attention enough? Could that be part of it?
I'm sure.
Could our complacency lie there?
Could be. Yeah. Very much. Why, there's so many distractions going on. Mm. There's so many. I mean, look how busy everyone is. We can't focus, and everybody allows their finances to be run by the financial planners of the world and so forth. But anyway, that's a different story. But I saw this article and I thought it was interesting. And then I'm going to share with the probably won't have time to share with you the article that I was reading about the four billionaires.
Ooh.
And their
kumbaya moment.
Well, no, it's actually frightening how these four billionaires basically control, and their idea of the future, how they work, how they're working together. They're not competing against one another. They're working together. And they're talking about, they have Amazon has a research and development of a warehouse where they have, I don't know, thousands of robots and 5 humans. Yes.
Yikes.
So when I see this about the new manufacturing jobs could be added in the U.S. over the next 2 years, and it's coming from Goldman Sachs, I'm not buying.
How many of them are human?
How many of those are, yes, 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 yes. Because you know what they're doing in these new factories that they're building, what they're building for mainly the chips. You know, it has to be pretty automated, I would think.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of money being floating in from the, I don't even want to call it the Inflation Reduction Act, because they even admitted that it was a lie. But there's a lot of money is going into investments and incentives for the semiconductor and, of course, the green technology sectors, construction and manufacturing facilities. Really kind of shot up over the past year. Maybe that's why we need all of those people coming across the border to go to work in these factories. Anyway, spending on the equipment that'll go inside these new facilities is expected to be even greater than the money spent constructing the building themselves. And
It is crazy. You know, the four billionaires, I'd like to hear more about that, perhaps on Thursday's program.
Okay.
I mean, there's...
I'll send it to you. It's frightening.
A New Yorker article by Ronan Farrow talks about Elon Musk now being called the Space King. This one focuses in part on his SpaceX having been providing free internet access to Ukraine during the war. But at one point recently appeared to be threatening to pull access, setting off a panic among U.S. officials. One of whom reportedly told Farrow, and excuse my language I'm quoting here, ladies and gentlemen. We are living off his good graces, and that sucks. But the government's also dependent on Musk and its push to transition to electric vehicles and more space transportation.
Well, that is, we're out of time. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Well, I'm standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. It's such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on,
since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, the Uber Right House Freedom Caucus, now demanding a series of conservative policy changes in exchange for giving its support to any short-term funding measure that's designed to avert a government shutdown on September 30th. The Republican rebels insist that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who floated the idea of a stopgap bill last week, impose conditions that the Democratic-led Senate and President Biden are extremely unlikely to accept. McCarthy is likely to have to take the conservatives' demands into account, given his party's slim margin of control in the House, just as he did in the fight over raising the country's debt ceiling a few months ago when their demands formed the basis for the House Republican negotiating position. It's unlikely that Democrats will help supply the votes to McCarthy to pass a short-term spending bill that includes the Freedom Caucus's policy demands anyway. And if they did, conservatives have held open the option to retaliate by forcing a vote to overthrow McCarthy as speaker. the conservative lawmakers said any short-term funding bill must include these things: a House-passed GOP border security bill that would boost the number of Border Patrol agents, require the Homeland Security Secretary to resume construction of a border wall, and limit the ability of some migrants to seek asylum in the U.S. The group said a bill must also address the unprecedented weaponization of the Justice Department and FBI to focus them on prosecuting real criminals instead of conducting political witch hunts and targeting law-abiding citizens. While they don't give specifics, some members of the group have called to abolish the FBI entirely, their version of defund the police, I presume. The Freedom Caucus also said it will oppose any blank check for Ukraine in any supplemental spending bills, a sign of opposition to the administration's latest request to allocate an additional $24 billion for Ukraine's war against Putin. If no funding bill becomes law by September 30th, it will force a shutdown of many, if not most, federal government services that aren't deemed essential. Now, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets once more. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought. I think her column this week is on bacteria. Plus, I have a piece called If You Think Tropical Storm Hillary is Bad, Just Wait for the Coming Debt Storm. The drenching hurricane-turned-tropical storm Hillary is forecast to leave what they're saying is a destructive swath up the western U.S. this week as relief workers continue their search for any signs of life among the still 850-plus missing residents of Lahaina, over 3,000 miles away on Maui. Meanwhile, economic prognosticators are wondering what's in store this coming weekend at the Kansas City Fed Symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The annual summer conference, which will be held Thursday through Saturday, features a slew of speakers who will largely be preaching to a preoccupied choir. They will mostly pontificate their profligate theories, or if you prefer, officiously wax poetic about this year's theme, structural shifts in the global economy. Dispassionate and Fed speak enough to escape the attention of most common Americans? You betcha. Although the stream of papers slated to be delivered and discussed at the event have yet to be released, one thing is clear. Perhaps the most compelling mantras underlying the structural shifts theme should be focusing on the storm debt, public and private, brewing in the U.S. As Jennifer Soar suggests in a recent Business Insider article, troubles are already bubbling up to the surface as loans pile up and borrower confidence falters. Of course, Fitch's recent downgrading of the federal government's credit rating and Moody's downgrading of 10 U.S. banks, plus, you know, today's announcement of the S&P downgrade should make all Americans concerned about the nation's creditworthiness and debt flowing out of the banking sector in particular. But she rightly puts the focus on more granular problems, mounting across debt markets. In addition, those issues have arisen as private and public sectors are confronted by a drastically different environment than they did in the 2010s when interest rates were at historic lows coming out of the Great Recession. Source says if low rates spurred the sugar rush of heavy borrowing, rising interest rates may be the setting the stage for the sugar crash. We witnessed the initial domino fall in March with the implosion of Silicon Valley Bank, thanks to the mismanage of its balance sheet, weighed down by longer-term bonds that quickly fell in value as interest rates climbed. First SVB, then Signature, and First Republic banks quickly fell one after the other. The initial fallout from those failures was somewhat held in check, I guess. But then came Moody's warning 3 months later when the rating agency downgraded mostly smaller banks' credit, but by one full notch, banks like Fulton, Commerce, and M&T. At the same time, Moody's affirmed the ratings of 11 other banks, but placed them on a negative outlook because of a, quote, decline in the bank's stability. They included banks like Ally, Simmons, OCK, Fifth Third, Regions, Cadence, First National Bank of PA, Citizens, Capital One, Huntington National, and PNC. And now market pundits and investing icons like hedge fund guru Ray Dalio and economist Noriel Rubini warn that a full-blown debt crisis could be on the way. And Soar offers five warning signs that she says are flashing in U.S. debt markets as we speak. First, private debt levels are rising at a stunning rate. They've hit new records this year. Credit card debt just passed $1 trillion for the first time ever, according to the Fed. Personal unsecured loans have also hit a new high, reaching $225 billion, according to TransUnion. Same for corporate debt, which has seen volumes grow to $7.8 trillion, according to Janice Henderson. Governmental debt looks even more dire. The gross national debt, and it's just the federal government's debt, blew through $32 trillion for the first time this year. And according to Too Big to Fail Bank of America, $5 billion potentially could be added each day over the next 10 years. Think about that. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office projects that debt held by the public could rise from just below 100% of GDP right now to an astounding 150+% by 2050 under current policies in place today. Second, corporate defaults are swelling. Soar points out that with rising interest rates and companies' growing debt burdens, defaults in 2023 have already surpassed all of last year's total. A total of 55 U.S.-based firms defaulted on their debt in the first half of the year. It's a 53% increase from the 36 that defaulted last year. It's according to Moody's. Soar adds that as much as $1 trillion in corporate debt could default if the nation faces a full-blown recession. That's according to a Bank of America warning. And third, late payments are growing. Soar reports that people and companies alike are increasingly falling behind on their loan payments. Commercial property owners that were 30 days or more late on monthly payments or that have already defaulted on their mortgages rose to 3% in the first quarter this year. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but the Mortgage Bankers Association says delinquency rates for all personal loans rose to 2.2% in the first quarter, and that's up from 1.7% in 2021. And fourth, banks are itching to dump their risky debt. Banks have been trying to dump loans that have a higher default risk, even if it means selling those assets at a loss, or as some of them would say, a discount. Too Big to Fail's J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Capital One are among the Wall Streeters trying to get rid of large commercial real estate assets, according to Bloomberg. Soar notes that banks are also pulling back on their new issuing debt as financial conditions tighten, which she says spells trouble for especially the commercial real estate industry. About $1.5 trillion of that so-called CRE debt set to mature in the next few years will need to be refinanced right now at substantially higher interest rates. Property owners could indeed be surprised when they go to refinance their mortgages with higher rates and resulting lower property valuations. And with fears of commercial real estate default looming, banks have already started putting a hold on their lending, especially after the triad of bank failures earlier this year. In fact, you could say the credit crunch is already here, as banks have recorded the sharpest decline in lending on record. And it could get crunchier than a freshly opened box of Cap'n Crunch. According to the minutes of their July policy meeting, Fed officials are seriously considering that they may not have to stop shrinking their massive balance sheet when they begin cutting interest rates. Quote, a number of participants noted that that balance sheet runoff need not end when the committee eventually begins to reduce the target range for the federal funds rate. Janelle Marti writes that this approach could present communications challenges for the Fed. Indeed. She says that's because reducing their portfolio of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, which is the crux of quantitative tightening, is normally considered a strategy for tightening monetary policy. Interest rate cuts work the opposite way, loosening or easing policy by lowering borrowing costs. Marti notes that the Fed's most recent economic projections from June, showing policy makers expect to start lowering interest rates sometime next year. She adds that although the goal of rate cuts are usually to stimulate the economy, think the early days of the pandemic, Fed officials are now trying to keep rates from becoming too restrictive as inflation falls, with the goal of avoiding that dreaded recession. And for that reason, some officials have said such rate cuts might not necessarily undermine the Fed's efforts to keep shrinking its portfolio. One of them, Dallas Fed President Lori Logan, observed, "If we are lowering interest rates to get back to a neutral position, that wouldn't be a reason to stop the decline. My expectation," she continued, "is that we have room for the balance sheet to continue shrinking for quite some time." Well, Marti believes Fed officials want to keep reducing their balance sheet, which ballooned during the pandemic to a peak of just shy of $9 trillion to stabilize markets and support the economy. Since last June, the Fed has been rolling off some of those balance sheet assets as they mature at a pace of about $800 million a month. And now the Fed's balance sheet stands at about $8.2 trillion. But Marti notes that efforts to keep the runoff going could be interrupted for reasons unrelated to rate cuts. For example, the last time Fed officials were unwinding the balance sheet, circumstances forced them to halt the runoff and start intervening in money markets. Remember when reserves in the banking system fell too low and caused rates on overnight repurchase agreements to skyrocket? Yeah, it could happen again, but, you know, more so. More recently, a lot of liquidity drain has come from the Fed's reverse repo program. That's where money market funds in particular can park their cash with the Fed overnight. But Marti warns that now the decline in banks' reverse repo usage has leveled off, some analysts are concerned that more cash could leak from other segments of the financial system. Most important of those is bank reserves. And if reserves would fall too much, especially because of their importance, particularly to systemically important global banks, i.e. the too bigs to fail, the Fed would likely slow or even abruptly stop QT. Well, I guess if there's a moral to this convoluted story, it's eat your Captain Crunch while it's still crunchy. Yes, chew on that for a while, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please have a good evening and be safe out there. Bye-bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.